ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News Breakdown.
Time for Nightlife News Breakdown. In Federal Parliament, question time today, proceedings were suddenly and darkly interrupted. Lights go out. Walls come tumbling down. The lights did go out indeed, as Health Minister Mark Butler was speaking. In fact, this disastrous thing happened.
Australians have saved $1.9 billion at the pharmacy counter because of our cheaper medicines measures. Pensioners have received...
Members on my left will cease interjecting.
Yeah, well, you know what it's like in any classroom, isn't it? When you're a kid, any classroom, when the lights went out, it was pretty much the same, wasn't it? It gave the federal opposition, of course, some welcome relief and something at least to taunt the government with as they held up their phones with their torches on, interjecting about the cost of the government's energy policies. The blackout, of course, was due to bad weather cutting power lines in some Canberra suburbs. The lights quickly came back on. Across the country it was a similar story, wasn't it? But it was a flat inflation rather than illumination that had the government on the back foot in Parliament, with Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers having to defend the government's economic management in the wake of higher-than-expected inflation data. It did come as a surprise. The price of goods and services has risen to 3.8% in the year to October. That's an increase over the previous month's result of 3.6%. Not everyone was expecting this. Jim Chalmers, the Treasurer, put part of the hike down to the expiry of state-based energy rebates.
An outcome which is higher than we'd like through the year. In headline terms in particular, but also in underlying terms as well. We acknowledge that, but more than acknowledge that, we are doing something about it. We're providing cost of living help in the most responsible way that we can.
Yes. Well, the Shadow Treasurer, Jim, of course, Ted O'Brien, blamed the Treasurer, claiming the rise was because of Jimflation, that's his word, and he also took aim at his Labor counterpart for avoiding real wage figures, which he claims are 2.2% lower than when he took office. Well, joining us tonight for Nightlife News Breakdown, Amy Remekas, contributing editor for The New Daily and chief political analyst for the Australia Institute. Amy, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me.
Nasty jump in inflation numbers. This wasn't expected, was it? Is the inflation battle still not won?
Well, I mean, the inflation battle is never truly won. It's why they call it a dragon, because it just goes to sleep and it can roar up at any moment. Whether or not it was expected or not, I think that is contested, because a lot of economists that I was speaking to across the spectrum did actually expect to see a jump, partly because of the end of energy relief, also because there's been a bit of uncertainty in the global markets and people are still spending. So that wasn't completely unexpected. It's also been a change in how the ABS presents these numbers, and the monthly data is a little bit tricky because especially the headline, which is everything, it's all the ups and downs, unlike the trimmed mean, the underlying inflation, where you have those volatile parts chopped out. The monthly inflation data hasn't been atomized across the quarter, so it does always have a bit of a spike of interest where everyone goes, oh God, it's gone up. And then when you see it over the quarter, it maybe isn't as bad. So I think everyone's going to be holding out for that next quarterly statement, although I do not think that the RBA will be giving anybody rate relief next week.
No rate cut for this year, maybe not ever. Not now, not ever, maybe.
Well, there's been two this year, I think. No more rate cuts this year.
Who's the better economic manager? Former Deputy Prime Minister and National MP Michael McCormack was critical of the government's efforts on inflation, and he says it'll delay interest rate relief and households are feeling the pinch. Well, yes, fair enough.
Mr. and Mrs. Average out there are paying through the nose. Every time they open their quarterly power bills, they should see Chris Bowen's face. Jim Chalmers has got a lot to answer for. Labor can't run the economy anywhere near as well as the coalition can, and it's showing. It's showing in the numbers.
Well, it's an interesting claim from Michael McCormack here, Amy, isn't it? Especially claiming the coalition can manage the economy better than Labor, because according to the latest Australian election study, that's not so anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah, the attitude has changed, but the data has always been pretty clear that Labor have actually been better economic managers. And when last time that Michael McCormack was in government, the inflation had a six in front of it. So the way that the coalition are treating this inflation spike, and I'm not saying that it is not causing people pain, of course it isn't, but the absolute hubris and hyperbole is not actually helping anyone. Because when the coalition was last in power, so I think it was March 2022, inflation was with the six. We saw the big jump. That's when we started to see interest rates actually start to increase. There's a variety of reasons for that. Wage growth was also lower under the coalition. Taxes, the coalition historically higher taxes than Labor is. So there's a whole bunch of reasons of why Labor is actually better economic managers. And we have to also remember that during the global financial crisis, Labor was in power and Australia was one of the only like-minded economies that did not go into recession because of how Labor responded to that, which was with stimulus rather than with austerity like most other nations did. I think, though, the change that that ANU Griffith survey has picked up on is that people are a bit tired of the coalition's rhetoric, combined with the fact that one of the major projects that Jim Chalmers and Anthony Albanese have had since taking power is, one, to present Labor as the natural party of government, which historically has been thought of as a conservative realm or the coalition's sort of area in Australia, that they are the natural party of government. And two, to change how people think about Labor being economic managers, because it's one of the things that has always hurt them in election campaigns, is this, you know, they're high spending, high taxing, yada, 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 even when it's not true. I think that they might have actually succeeded on the second one. Mostly, though, because the coalition have been so terrible with the economy, particularly over the last 10 years that they were in power, that I think people are actually just a bit sick of it.
Yes, it's interesting, this Australian election study. ANU and the Australian National University and Griffith University do it after each election, drill down into the numbers, and it's come up with some interesting things. Peter Dutton's apparently the least popular leader on record in the survey's 38-year history.
Shocking.
And for the first time, the proportion of voters who identified as non-partisan exceeded those who identified as Liberal voters. So it's interesting.
Yeah, and that I'll just pick on that bit because that was the part that really interested me, because I think we all know that Peter Dutton was very unpopular because of the election result and also anybody who watched him. But I also think that that non-partisan thing is very interesting. And if I was a mainstream politician in, I don't know, the Labor Party, I would be very worried about that at the moment, because we don't have the same number of rusted on. In fact, people are going the other way where they're being quite volatile with their vote. That means that not only is there no safe seat anymore, there's no safe vote. You cannot count on someone to vote for you again just because they voted for you last time.
No, that's right. I mean, that's quite true. I mean, Labor might have a big majority, but the majority, as we know, is it's shallow. It's thin. It's not by big margins. And it could evaporate.
It could evaporate
quite easily. Look, the coalition's trying to spruik its economic credentials at present, though, and Ted O'Brien, the shadow treasurer of the National Press Club, saying the coalition wants to present tax cuts as its solution to an intergenerational tragedy. He says in a pitch to young voters, and argues the federal budget is on an unsustainable footing and too reliant on bracket creep. Well, these have all been problems that are, you know, have been of long standing, haven't they? How's Ted O'Brien viewed in Canberra anyway?
It really depends who you speak to. He's not overly popular. He's not overly popular in his own party room. He's certainly not popular within the parliament proper. He's not somebody like even Michael McCormack, who is quite popular across party lines. And, you know, even if they have different opinions about policy or ideologies, they'll still, you know, tell you what a great person he is. I never hear that about Ted O'Brien. And I've known of Ted O'Brien and seen Ted O'Brien in action for many years. I'm a Queenslander. I watched him, you know, rise up through the backbench. He's kind of fallen upwards in terms of the job that he's got. Right. And now he's very much trying to make his mark, but he just doesn't seem to have enough of the X factor to sell it. That's at least what a lot of his colleagues would tell me.
Hmm. Amy, you've written this week in the New Daily how before Labor becomes too complacent and comfortable and relaxed, watching their opposition, therefore their political enemies in disarray, that Labor needs to take a good look at itself. It needs to be far braver than is at the moment. You say their current attitude is power for its own sake and to hell with courage. Labor has lost its way. What are you saying they should do?
I think, and this is something that I've been thinking about for many years, not just this term of government, I think that Labor, in seeking to become the natural party of government, if such a thing even exists,
whatever that means,
they've moved more towards the centre or centre-right. And when that happens, they also stop doing as much reform, because with reform comes risk. And this Labor government doesn't want to offend anybody. And they're also cozying up to big business and big industry and trying to appeal to everyone. And when you do that, you lose core groups. You also lose sight of doing these reforms that you need to do. So we have lackluster mining-friendly environmental protection laws that are being offered up. We've got a government that can't do anything on gambling ad regulation, despite the fact that its own caucus, its very quiet caucus, I might add, you know, seems very uncomfortable with the government's position, and there's no losers there except the gambling industry. Mm. Labor won't actually do it. The very modest super reforms that would only have impacted the very wealthy members of Australian society, Labor wouldn't do it because there was a little bit of backlash. And so you have a Labor government that is not doing what its own platform says, what its own members would say that they would want the Labor government to do. You have incrementalism. And I think that if you look at the last election, when the swing was towards Labor, they still almost lost Fremantle, Bean and Franklin, and they were in a trouble in quite a few more where they had to rely on preferences and have a bit of a fight. That's a warning the coalition ignored in 2019 when it came to its moderate Liberal seats in the inner city. And I think that if Labor doesn't start showing some reform, they're going to start seeing those warning alarms blare quite loudly.
Mm. Okay, look, in Canberra, Finance Minister Katy Gallagher has apparently written to several departments and agencies asking them to find areas where up to 5% of spending could be, quote, reprioritised. Oh, yeah. Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers is defending the request. We all remember how critical of the opposition he was when it proposed cuts to the public service during the election campaign early this year. But the Treasurer says, oh, well, this is not the same thing.
Work out areas which are lower priorities to redirect that spending to higher priority areas to get the debt down by almost $200 billion since we came to office. It's not unusual or controversial for Treasurers to ask departments to identify those areas to see if that spending can be redirected elsewhere.
Mm, well, Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg says, well, at least when you look at them, they look you back in the eye. He says when they promised cuts in the coalition selection campaign, well, at least they were honest about it.
Well, I think it's a pretty bad deal for the people of Canberra who were told by their government that their jobs would be safe. I mean, at least with Peter Dutton, at least you knew what you were going to get. I think with these guys, apparently they're not going to do anything, but they are going to do secret retrenchments. It's a pretty low blow.
So are they going to cut the public service or not, Amy?
Look, I don't think that they will end up cutting the public service. I mean, the Liberal proposition was to cut, I think it was about 48,000 jobs across the public service. And I think people maybe have forgotten that when Labor first came to power, they also did this in their first budget that they did in 2022 in October, where they asked departments to find savings. And they have asked departments to find savings before every single budget, where it's basically just saying, what are you spending on consultants? What are you spending on contracts? What are you spending on projects at a low priority? Can we repurpose that? That does not mean that there won't be any job cuts, but this isn't necessarily a policy of, you know, of cutting in terms of headcount. It's more of a, we actually need to start to rein in some spending, which, you know, the Finn has been campaigning on for years. Mm. And the coalition also has been talking about the balloon in government spending and how that's driving inflation, even though it's not. So it is interesting to see that you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Just in terms of policy.
Yeah, the first Labor government, just back on your point about, you know, whether they're doing things or not, in their first term, the voice was a big thing. There was a big signature policy. Now, that came to nothing, as we know. Are they totally gun-shy? What's going to be the signature of this term, do you think?
Yeah, look, it's hard to say. And I was reading Sean Kelly, he's a Sydney Morning Herald correspondent, a contributor, and he was a former staffer for Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard. And he watches governments quite closely. And he wrote a brilliant book called The Game of Scott Morrison. And he's now written a quarterly essay on this Labor government. And he says that, you know, Labor tends to do their big reforms in the second year of the term. So for the previous parliament, that was the voice referendum and stage three tax cuts change. For this parliament, it's unsure. There are whispers that there is tax reform are coming around the corner. There is starting to be an increase in voices, including in the labour movement, so in the unions, for negative gearing reform, capital gains reform, and a 25% flat tax on gas exports. That is starting to gain momentum within the government. And there is a train of thought that says that one of the reasons why Labor did capitulate on the super, or the people who wanted it, on the super reforms was because they wanted to save up whatever capital to have the big fight when it came to actual big reforms. Will this government actually do it? I don't know. That's going to be Anthony Albanese's decision, or at least the decision of a cabinet that is willing to challenge him to push for reforms. But we know that inequality is rising. We know that people are not happy with what they're doing on climate and environment. And we know that people are not happy with the lack of reform that this Labor government is pushing. That doesn't mean that they're not popular, or that Anthony Albanese is not more popular than Susan Lee. But I know from the branches and from members in Labor and from people who are starting to agitate that this groundswell is starting up within the grassroots movement, because they're hearing it from people in the community who want something done on housing that actually makes a difference, that want something done on inequality, and want to be able to look their children in the eye and say that something is being done on climate.
Amy Remigas with us for the Nightlife News Breakdown. Look, just finally onto the sideshow that is Barnaby Joyce.
The steak in the sandwich press, yes, the biggest issue in the nation.
Dear, oh dear. But One Nation's, you know, has risen in the polls. I mean, according to some polls, if you believe them, they've risen to popularity of perhaps 18%, whether that's all from the coalition or from the Nationals, of course, I suppose is a matter. Nationals leader David Littleproud says that Barnaby Joyce, who says he will make his mind up by the end of the week once he's digested the sandwich press steak, should remember that he's got a contract with the people of New England. This is what he had to say.
Well, that's a decision for Barnaby Joyce. He made a contract with the people of New England as the Nationals member. He's made a statement that he won't recontest that seat, but that contract still holds. He has a contract with the people of New England as the Nationals member to see it through to the 2028. He's welcome into our party room to contribute.
Well, I suppose if you say you're not going to stand again, I don't know whether you've got the contract the contract's on foot or not. Would the Nationals be very concerned if Barnaby did take up with One Nation, or might they regard it as a blessing?
I think it depends on which side of the Nationals you sit. I don't think David Littleproud would be too upset if Barnaby Joyce left the Nationals. It would be a major problem for him that's gone, and it would also mean that Barnaby Joyce's faction would also be slightly nobbled. Whether or not he's actually going to go to One Nation, I mean, he has influence and relevancy at the Nationals that he wouldn't necessarily have with One Nation. They are still a minor party. He gets invited onto programs to speak because he's a Nationals MP, not necessarily going to happen
if he's
it's
Monday
Nation.
Morning sunrise.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. Yeah. Are they going to then have just, you know, Barnaby Joyce versus someone from the Greens? Like, it doesn't have as much mainstream appeal. But that being said, Pauline Hanson does not have a successor. It has been a problem for One Nation for some time, and there is talk that she will not see out this full Senate term. And what a cozy place for Barnaby Joyce to coast towards retirement, back where he started in the Senate.
She could leave him the sandwich press
He could cook all that Wagyu steak on the sandwich press.
Well, there are very long precedents of senators looking after themselves. Senator Brian Harradine, an independent senator from Tasmania, comes to mind, who used to camp in his office. All right, Amy, that's a long time ago. Always terrific to talk with you, and I really appreciate your time.
Anytime.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.